kind of faced with that March 1 deadline, and they'd come in with a grocery sack full of papers and slips and calendars. They'd dump it on my desk, and they'd say, here are my records. Figure out what I owe. Make sure I don't pay a penny more than I have to, and don't charge me more than $25 for all this. You know, as I did these tax returns, I realized how tough it is to make a living as a farmer. It's hard because very little control over your input costs, very little control over what price is paid for whatever it is you grow, very little control over the weather. So it's tough. And then during the course of the 1980s in my state and across the Midwest and in many parts of the country, we faced a farm crisis where a lot of good folks were overextended and they lost their farms. And I represented many of those folks who were being foreclosed on. And I realized that it wasn't just about money, it wasn't just about how you support your family, it was about a way of life. It was a connection to family history. It was something deeply rooted in these folks. And I grew to have just profound respect for them and felt that it was my responsibility, my duty, when I got in public life to try to figure out ways in which we could make it a little bit easier for folks to make a living. And that led me to believe that we needed to diversify and to create options for people to be able to succeed. That it wasn't just one way of farming that would be the way that everyone would have to follow, that we could create a variety of different ways. So I'm here today, first and foremost, to thank you folks for what you're doing, because you are helping to create that alternative. And also to remind you, to remind your friends and neighbors how important you and those who live, work, and raise their families in rural areas are to the country. You know, I've been traveling around the country and I've been trying to remind every single person I talk to, particularly those who live in urban centers or suburban areas, those who may not have had much contact with rural America, precisely how much rural America means to all Americans. Now, it's obviously the place of where most of our food is produced. 85% of everything that is consumed in the United States agriculturally is raised in rural America. And that makes us a food secure nation. We really literally don't have to rely on anybody to have enough food to feed our population. That's an enormous national security advantage that people almost never talk about. But as climates change and water resources become scarce and weather conditions become more extreme, I can guarantee you that the capacity to produce your own, the fact that you're not relying on someone else, is an enormous advantage. Now, it's not just food, it's also water. Nearly 80% of the surface drinking water that Americans consume and use in their homes and businesses comes as a result of what happens on private working lands and in forested areas located in rural America. So it's the source of water. And if you really think about it, every time you flip on a light, turn on a stove, or get in your car and start driving away, the fuel, the energy that is produced that allows you to do all that, the vast majority of it, at least that which is produced domestically, the vast majority of it is produced here in rural America. So it's the source of food, water, fuel, and energy. And then when you realize that it represents a small part of our country, 16% of the population, but 40% of the military comes from those small towns, from those ranches, from those farms, you realize that those families are disproportionately sending their children into harm's way to defend this country. You really begin to realize that your life as an American, regardless of where you live, is profoundly connected to rural America. So the first thing that I think is important is for people to understand the importance of rural America. The second thing they have to understand is the important role that the biodiesel industry, the biofuel industry, the renewable energy and fuel industry is playing in helping rural America begin to turn the corner. You all know this, that we confront two major problems in rural America. One is persistent poverty, and two is that we've continued to lose a lot of our sons and daughters to opportunities elsewhere. But this industry is creating a new dynamic. It's raising farm income. We've had record farm income the last couple of years, in large part because of this industry. It's helping to promote job growth at a time when the economy needs as many jobs as possible. This industry alone is responsible for over 64,000 jobs. The renewable energy and fuel industry is responsible for nearly 400,000 jobs, nearly $30 billion of income for families, contributes over $43 billion to the gross domestic product. It's a big deal economically. It provides consumer choice and lower cost gas. And it reduces our reliance on foreign oil. When I became Secretary of Agriculture in 2009, 62% of all the oil that we used in this country was imported. And God knows where it came from. And God knows where the money that we spent went. Today, it's less than 50%. And it's dropping like a rock, in large part because of the advances that this industry has made. And Americans do understand that. A recent study at Texas A&M suggests that Americans see reducing our reliance on foreign oil as a national security imperative. 80% of Americans believe that. So this industry is making us a more secure country. And the most exciting piece of this is that it's not just limited to fuel and energy that you're producing, but because of what you're doing, how you're doing it, how innovative and entrepreneurial you all are, you're beginning to develop new techniques, new technologies, new efficiencies, and new products. And you've given birth to this whole notion of a bio-based economy where it's not just fuel and energy, but it's chemicals, it's fabrics, it's fibers, it's polymers. And with that, you create the possibility of a new American economy, one in which we are no longer locked in our social strata, one in which we actually can get into the middle class if we're struggling financially, or we can get out of the middle class to the upper middle class because we have social mobility, the ability to move up in the economy by working hard and sacrificing, because we're back in the business in America of making and creating and innovating. Your industry is helping to do that. And that's one of the reasons, that you've been successful is why you now find yourself in the crosshairs of a challenging time where people are raising questions and challenges about the industry. And you've got many of them. You've got folks internationally challenging the industry based on the sustainability of the practices that we utilize. You've got folks in this country creating the false notion that somehow in America we're not big enough, strong enough, smart enough, innovative enough to be able to produce enough food to do what we need to do to feed our own people and yet still have some left over to create fuel in these other products. That somehow it's an either-or situation. It's either food or fuel. When you all know, and I know, it's actually fuel and food. We can do it, and have done it, and we'll continue to do it, because we're the most productive farmers in the world. I'm sure it drives you a bit crazy when some environmental groups raise questions about the environmental credentials of this industry. When you know, and I know, that it's better for the air, better for the environment, but yet there are notions out there that this is somehow not sustainable and not assisting the environment. You know, and I know, that we're dealing with an industry that can help contribute to reducing greenhouse gases. We just had a study released yesterday at USDA on the impact of climate change in agriculture. It should come as no surprise that this report, 140-some pages, basically suggested we're going to see more intense weather conditions, more droughts, more floods, more horrific tornadoes and storms, and we're going to see them more frequently, which means that we really have to develop a set of strategies for how we mitigate and adapt to this changing climate. And it's going to be the folks in rural America that are going to figure this out and are figuring it out. And this industry is one of the solutions. You're facing regulatory and litigative challenges, where folks are suggesting that the testing's not strong enough or that the information is not correct and that the renewable fuel standard needs to be changed and it's not reliable and it's not effective, when in fact it's exactly the opposite. That standard is working. It's doing what it's supposed to do. It's helping to create an industry that supports jobs, improves incomes, reduces reliance on foreign oil, and gives consumers choice. It's working. Now, we've got these challenges. And one of the messages I want to deliver today is to ensure that you leave here understanding the reason why you're being challenged is because you're winning. So you're not losing, you're winning. Trust me, if you were losing, nobody would be paying attention to you. But you're winning. So these challenges are a reflection of the good work you've done over the last 20 years. But there's more work to do in meeting these challenges. And I want to give you a couple of ideas. My view is that this industry needs to, and agriculture generally, needs to flex its muscles a little bit more than it has. I've gotten in a little trouble in the countryside by suggesting that the political relevance of rural America has been diminished. A little tough talk, because we didn't get a farm bill through the process. And my view is that as populations shrink, that means there are fewer people in Congress who understand or represent the rural interests, and it just becomes more difficult to get things done that are specifically designated as rural initiatives. And so I'm suggesting strongly to audiences that we think about extending the reach of agriculture. Let me give you one example. When you walked into these meetings, when you flew from wherever you came from to Las Vegas, probably the last thing on your mind is who the Secretary of the Defense was going to be. You probably maybe picked up the paper and probably read about Chuck Hagel and probably tried to decide, well, does he support Israel or doesn't he? Or, you know, the things he said about Iran or the stuff that's being reported. But that position is really important to your industry. Here's why. You got a Secretary of the Navy, Ray Mabus, who sees the future. And he sees the future in which America will be competing for defense purposes against other large, well-equipped militaries from Asian countries, specifically China. And he knows that for us to continue to be strong and protected, we're going to have a Navy that is capable of being in many different places, which means it's going to consume a lot of energy to get from here to there. And we have two choices on that energy. We can either produce it at home, or we can buy it from somebody else. Now, if we buy most of it from somebody else, we're going to have to defend that somebody else, because they're our energy source. If we produce it at home, we have a added benefit of not necessarily having to defend others. We also create jobs at home. So Ray's vision, which I share, is that one half of all energy used by the United States Navy will be bio-based. That's a huge amount. And Ray can do that so long as he has a Secretary of Defense who also believes that's a good thing. Because if he doesn't, that Secretary of Defense can say, Ray, I'm sorry, we just can't fund that initiative. We can't support that initiative. There's a higher priority. Agriculture, the biofuel, the biodiesel industry flexing its muscles, saying, you know what? We're going to make sure that Senator Hagel understands and appreciates the importance of this industry to the Defense Department. And we're going to make a relationship and a friendship, and we're going to be supportive. So when he's the Secretary of Defense, he will support Secretary Mabus. And now all of a sudden, it's not just the biodiesel industry, it's not just agriculture, it's now the Defense Department that wants to know what's going to happen with the RFS and the renewable fuel industry, because they're relying on that industry to create drop-in aviation and marine fuel that will make them less reliant on foreign oil and make us a more secure nation. That's a different equation than one we have today. Secondly, we got to constructively engage, even with folks who may not necessarily agree with us. I think of the environmental groups. There ought to be conversations to make sure that folks understand and appreciate the science as you and I understand it, which is that there are absolute benefits to climate change adaptation and mitigation, absolute benefits to air and water quality emanating from this industry, and that the farmers and producers are engaged in sustainable practices. There isn't that awareness because so many of us in the United States are so disconnected from the folks who raise our food. We just don't understand how it's done. And we need to be told and taught. So one thing I would do if I were this industry is I would be reaching out to the environmental groups. I'd be sitting down with them. I'd be beginning the dialogue. And it might be difficult because at first there may be conflict. But I would work through that. Because if you go to a member of Congress and say, we want to support the RFS because it's good for the biofuel industry and it helps to create jobs, folks are going to say, well, that's kind of self-serving. But if you're there with someone from an environmental group who says, oh, by the way, it's not just beneficial for their industry, Senator, it's also beneficial for the environment and we're supportive of it, that's a different conversation with that senator or representative. And it's not just the folks at national level you need to talk to. It's important to engage people at the state and local level. You come from a wide variety of states. Every state has senators. Every state has representatives. Every state has governors. Every state has state legislators. You need to engage them in understanding the benefits of this industry to the locale and to the state in which you live, the number of jobs, the gross domestic product that's contributed. And you need the state legislative bodies to come on record as being supportive of this industry. And you need to make sure that those resolutions are then passed out to the congressional offices so that they know the folks back home are watching this issue. And you need to get governors engaged in this as they come to Washington, D.C. in a couple of weeks as part of the National Governors Association. All 50 governors, 54 governors will be there. They'll have a variety of opportunities to speak to members of Congress. And they ought to be taking with them a message of support for this industry. And you ought to make sure that that happens. It's not just local and state government leaders. It's also the local chamber of commerce person and the economic development person in the county in which your facility is located. Because they understand directly the benefit of having the jobs that you've helped to create. They understand and appreciate what happens when farmers have money in their pocket. Those Main Street businesses get supported. And they ought to be engaged in support of this effort. Because if members of Congress begin to hear from someone other than a farmer about the renewable fuel standard and the importance it plays in their community, that will make sure that they hesitate before they say, well, maybe it needs to be amended or maybe it needs to be eliminated. And you need to engage young people. You've got 500,000 young people who are part of a program called FFA. You all know what FFA is. Probably many of you were members of FFA. These kids are great kids, articulate, smart. They want a role. They want to help lead. Let's give them a job. Let's tell them to use their Facebook, their Twitter, their social media outlet to engage in this debate. And let them create the YouTube sensation like the Dodge Ram truck ad that played in the Super Bowl that will be viral and get people talking about this industry. Unleash them. It's their future. It's their rural America. It's their industry. It's their farm. And they're smart. Get them engaged. So why is this important? I'll finish with this. It's first about the ability to maintain your own livelihoods. That's fairly important. It's important for the people that work at your facilities whose jobs depend on it. That's important. But you have the capacity to help redefine, revitalize, and redesign the American economy to a place where it once was, where people really did have a fighting chance of moving into the middle class and moving up from the middle class. You have that capacity. You have the capacity to reignite a new century of innovation and entrepreneurship in this country. You have the ability to respond to the environmental challenge of a generation as climates change. You have the power to not only do all of that, but to reduce our reliance on foreign oil, make us a stronger nation, and still create enough food and fiber to help feed the world. That's an amazing opportunity. That's worth living for. That's worth getting up every day for. That's worth fighting for. So I'm here today to encourage you to understand you're winning. You got to keep fighting. You got to extend the fight, because the stakes are extraordinarily high. Your country's future depends on this, in my view. The capacity of folks to be raised in communities where the concept of community and service are alive and well will depend on your ability to make sure this industry grows. It's that important. And that's why I'm here. I firmly believe it. As long as I've got this opportunity, I'm going to use it to advocate for this, because I think it's right. I think it's good. I think it creates options. And I think it puts us in a position where there won't be another small town lawyer someplace in the future that has to sit and watch somebody in his office literally break down and cry because who they are is being taken away from them. You folks are that important. I hope you appreciate it. Let's get to work. Thank you.